Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 108, and these comics originally came out on September 2nd, 2009, which was a big day for me. It was my 40th birthday.
Whee! You're officially old.
I know, I'm feeling my age. I went bowling, man, I am just, I'm still sore, you know? It's like, it's like he even used a light ball, a 10-pounder or whatever. Anyways, and I suck at bowling. Starting us off in DC is Red Tornado number 1, and this is one out of, what, 6? Yeah.
6, yes.
But of course.
He sucks at bowling, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, it's a 6-issue series because, you know, it's perfect size for a trade paperback. I've always liked the Red Tornado. He's, I think, a great character who's been underutilized for decades. And it's funny, you know, I like him, but there have really not been any great stories with him other than, like, you know, his origin story, which they've told, like, 5 or 6 different times in different ways. And I had just gotten into the Justice League when they retold it with the Tornado Champion and Tornado Tyrant, and I think that was in Justice League 192 and 193. And he was a key member of the Satellite Era, so it was fun. But, you know, they did a miniseries with him in 1985, which just was really weak. And then, you know, they've done Young Justice and stuff. So going in with this, I was wondering, where are they going with this character? Is it going to be any good? And overall, I really like this issue. You know, the idea of him having a family with the Red Torpedo and Red Volcano and stuff, kind of cool. You know, I was a little confused when Tio Maro ended up in Bell Rev because, I mean, didn't he just show up in Wonder Woman or something?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that character's getting a lot of play, too, which is cool. He's a fun character. And, you know, really, this had a much stronger story, a much stronger art than I had been expecting. And what I liked is it furthered Red Tornado's overall story. It's expanding his cast of characters by giving him kind of a robotic family. And it's something that if you are following this character to any degree and want to have a story that, quote-unquote, matters, this qualifies. You know, it was a good use of his family, you know, his wife, his daughter, all that kind of stuff. I was a little put off by how robotic they made him, because they've really set him up in the past as being literally a ghost in a machine, almost. And, you know, so that bothered me a little, but not too much. Overall, this was really fun. I'm looking forward to where they're going with it, and having these other, you know, robotic elementals is just kind of cool. So, definitely something I would recommend. What do you think of it?
This issue sucked. Now, let me clarify. Sucked because I liked it. I've been trying to cut back. It's hard for me to cut back on comics. I did not order Red Tornado number 1. I didn't order it. I'm like, you know, okay, we just had kind of like a Red Tornado origin in Justice League with the Lightning Saga. Do I really need to see another Red Tornado origin? I'm tired of all these miniseries, you know, blah, 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 blah. I like, okay, I'm
so,
not.
So you're old and cranky. Got it.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I didn't want to order this thing. Then we're like, you know, going over and there's like no book to review that week. And I'm like, okay, I'll go and buy Red Tornado at the store and we'll review it. And then I went and bought it and I liked it. It was like, damn it, here's another series that I'm going to be buying 6 issues of. And it's like, so many of these comics, you know, it's like, I don't know, I go on all kinds of forums, and people bitch about comics all the time. It's like, oh, I don't like this, I don't like that, and it's like, you know, if there's like a single issue of a book, they're dropping the book, and, you know, it's like, a lot of books are just, if it's not a 5, you know, it's not like the best comic someone ever read. They're just like, you know, this is a terrible comic. It sucked. I I don't like it, anything like that. And it's like, you know, I'm just a little less selective. I mean, we'll gripe about certain things in certain comics, but in general, you know, I think it's like if a comic is a 3 out of 5 or better, I'll pretty much get it. You know, I'm not that hard to please on comics. If it's a decent, solid story and it's advancing character and universe and all this kind of stuff, I'm willing to read that because I'm just a fan of comics and a fan of the shared universes at Marvel and DC. And, you know, even, you know, some of the, you know, if I've got a series that I like, you know, in some other universe, whether it's Invincible or Walking Dead or, you know, Fables or whatever, you know, you can have a couple of issues that aren't great and, you know, I'm not going to be dropping the book over it. Now, a new book, you know, it's like you're trying to winnow your list down. That's, you know, something else, right? You get a new book that you're not going to have to make a commitment to. And if that first issue is not relatively compelling, it's a little easier to not pick up that series on an ongoing basis. And that's the thing with this one. I picked up the issue and it's like, ah, you know, if this is not like really pretty good, I don't really need to buy another, you know, it's $3, so which is good. You know, it's not a $4 issue, so we're only talking an $18 commitment here at cover price. But it's like, okay, well, that's $18 I can spend on something else or another $15. I picked it up and I was like, wow, that was a pretty damn good first issue. And it's like, damn, now I have to buy, have to buy, you know, but you know what I mean. Is, you know, now I'm going to buy the other 5 issues of this series. But I was very intrigued by the whole Red Torpedo, Red Volcano, you know, aspect of the other members of the family. And you had some Treya and Kathy Sutton in here. You had just his social interaction program not working.
That was actually the part that didn't work for me.
I actually like that. It's like it's kind of silly because, you know, computers. So it's like, hey, you know, he could have that thing running in the background and realistically, you know, that wouldn't happen. But
the thing is, he's not a computer. He's in a computer. I mean, to me, that was the problem. I mean, so far as a computer thing goes, if this were somebody who was strictly a programmed robot or whatever, yeah, that's fine, whatever. But we've had established for this character that there are these other entities taking up residence in this body. You know, they had that in Justice League when, okay, we've got the body, how come it's not coming back to life? Oh, wait, we've got to wait for his soul or that equivalent to inhabit.
Yeah, but it's
it.
it's still an android. You know, I think of it as, you know, there's some other spark there, but he's still essentially an android.
I could see going with the programming and stuff for the movement and stuff like that, but for the social interaction, that was the part that just, and I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying based on other stuff I've read, it kind of, you know, didn't quite jive. It didn't ruin the story or anything for me, but it's like, I had problems reconciling that with the ghost in the machine aspect of the character.
I like that part. So, didn't work for you, worked good for me. That was one of the better parts of the issue for me. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you know, point being, I'm reading this issue and, you know, Kevin Van Hook did a good job on it, I thought. And now I'm buying another, you know, 5 comic books from DC.
The only other part that seemed a little funny was the naming convention for the other robots. Okay, we got Red Tornado, and they're sticking with the red. Okay, fine. And that implies there may be a blue, a yellow, and all these other colors out there, but I doubt it. And then everything had to end in an O. So Red Torpedo for an aquatic, you know, water elemental. Okay. Red Inferno for the fire one. Fine. It was Volcano for the earth elemental, which is also getting kind of the fire powers too, which seemed a little off from just the strictly earth motif. But, no, not a big deal.
Yeah, Volcano is molten earth. It's the expression of earth into, that's how new land is created.
Yes, and I'm aware of this, but for somebody who's supposed to be strictly in, you know, I don't know, it just seemed like it was giving him a little more firepower, literally, and given we've got Red Inferno coming up, It just seemed a little redundant. So, but it was a cool character. It's a good look. And what I like is all of these characters have a similar design sense. You could believe, hey, they were built by the same person. They're unique enough yet similar enough to kind of previous looks Red Tornado has had to have that kind of family resemblance. And the other thing I really liked artistically was if you go to the second to last page, you got this one small little panel where you've got Red Tornado kind of in silhouette, yet you see his belt, his wristbands, and the little line going up to the circle with the T in it, kind of like that glows in the dark or whatever. And that's just a cool visual. You know, you also got the arrow on the head and stuff like that. So it was a fun issue. I enjoyed this, and it was, you know, a lot better than I was afraid it might be, because I didn't have high expectations going in. But I gave this a 4, and definitely recommend this for anyone who's a fan of the character.
I also gave it a high 4. I thought it was a really well-done issue.
For me, it's entirely possible that when the thing's said and done, the entire series could go to a 5. I mean, they've got a really strong start here. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Indeed.
Now, this is another android we're talking about.
I was surprised on this one because, you know, it's, and maybe it's just I'm not paying attention, but I was expecting it to be Jim Hammond. And, I mean, he appears.
Well, we should probably give the title of the book, which is Torch Number 1.
The Torch.
The Torch Number 1. Of 8. So.
By Marvel and Dynamite Entertainment. Because if Alex Ross deigns to grace a book with his presence, it has a Dynamite logo on it. So I was surprised, but it worked. And it really seems to, like, pull out of that Avengers Invaders book that just finished up to some degree.
But it was
focusing mostly on Toro.
Yeah. Let's say, it pulls out of that. It's a good follow-up to that Avengers Invaders book. But you don't really need to have read that to kind of follow and enjoy this one.
No, you don't. But the setup for this is certainly in that book, and this follows the events in that book. Though, as you say, you know, you can read this book without having read anything else and pretty much get what was done in here. What I really liked about this book most, I think, was how they were characterizing and fleshing out the Thinker. You know, the Thinker's been around forever, pretty much in the Marvel Universe. And they did the best job of giving the guy an actual character in this comic that I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a really good issue for him. And he hasn't, like you said, gotten a lot of use and certainly not a lot of good characterization over the years. And, you know, if you'd read stuff with him before or if you hadn't, this was a really good, strong issue for the Thinker character. Now, I mean, overall, you know, I thought this had a really nice opening with Toro. Interesting bit with the status quo for his wife. Although, I mean, since Toro's been dead and gone for ages, I kind of thought his wife should have been older.
That kind of bothered me a little bit, too, because he's looking in the window at this woman sitting on a couch with a guy. And, I mean, it's kind of small, and you see, she doesn't look that old. I mean, she looks like she's maybe in her 30s or something, maybe early 40s. I mean, she doesn't have gray hair or anything.
The lack of gray hair was what got me. Yeah.
Yeah. And Toro allegedly, I mean, cause I'm looking at this and I'm like, when I got to that page, I'm like, is this set in the current day or is this set, you know, somehow he was left back in the 40s or, you know, I was like, then I'm thinking back to the end of Avengers Invaders, you know, and then the Vision, not the Avengers Vision, but the 40s character, the Vision, is flying around. And it gave me a bit of pause there. That was one thing that kind of just confused me for a little bit in the story, because he's looking at his wife, and it's like, I don't see how that could be his wife from, you know, before, but maybe I missed something.
Yeah, that just seemed a little odd, but, I mean, not a huge deal.
They do avoid putting any dates on, like, the tombstone, when they go get Jim Hammond and other things like that. Although, you know, just the sheer inclusion of the Thinker sets the time on this that it's not, you know, the 40s.
Oh, yeah.
And then some of the other things that are in here, too. But, I mean, while they don't put a specific date to it.
Yeah. I mean, the earliest this could possibly be would be sometime after Reed Richards was around and the Silver Surfer was known on Earth. You know what I mean? So even if it was earlier in the Marvel era than current day, which it, I mean, it seems to be current day, but you know what I mean, yeah. So, I mean...
But the point there is that even on the sliding scale of Marvel time, if the current day, instead of starting in the 60s, you know, started in the 90s or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it certainly has to be current day, whereas since they make a point of talking about, you know, him being born in 1924 and seeing the Hindenburg as a kid and, you know, the World War II stuff, you have a definite 50-60 year gap there, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't leave the lower end of the scale ambiguous. They, you know, they set that very clearly at a point in time quite a long time ago. So I didn't know why it was necessary to have the wife scene. I don't think that added a lot to the story.
Well, they needed
other
to,
than confusion.
They needed to have something to show that life had moved on without him.
And they needed to have something. They didn't need to have that.
Agreed. But that's what it was for, and they could have done it more effectively some other way. They're trying to give him that man out of time aspect, which, you know, is a nice touch, but again, like you said, could have been more effectively done. What I really enjoyed about this issue was how the Thinker kind of goes into, you know, what's the likelihood of this guy having flame powers due to, you know, mutant type, you know, basis, encountering an android with almost identical flame powers, the two becoming friends, teaming up, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there has to be something more to it. It's too unbelievable for it to be a coincidence. And I'm curious if they're going to explain kind of the how and the why that the original Torch and Toro had such identical powers. I'm curious if Johnny Storm is going to somehow play into that in some way, at least tangentially, not to say the character even shows up. But, I mean, to me, that was kind of a nice touch, you know.
Yeah, my operating theory on that right now is that he is, because they established that he's a mutant, so I'm going to figure maybe he's a mutant that his mutant power is, you know, when it was activating or whatever, it, like, latched onto some other power and did some kind of replication of it or something.
If he's more of a mimic than an actual flame.
Or, you know, that it only was like that when it was activating, because it certainly, you know, it's not like it's mimicking things as he went along, but, like, as it was developing, it, like, latched out on and based itself on a template, which was Jim Hammond.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like that.
I just don't know enough about Toro's timeline to know, did he have the powers and then meet the Torch? Did he meet the Torch, then get the powers? I mean, and that's certainly a viable explanation. I'm just curious which way they go with it. You know, I also liked how when they had the Torch in the tube, you know, with, you know, flaming on and stuff, versus when you had Toro attacking that base, they're both guys covered in flame, yet they look different. You know, there's a subtlety there that, you know, I found interesting and, you know, is kind of tough to pull off. But I suspect they could have the original Torch, Toro, and the Johnny Storm human Torch all on the same panel and make them look different enough that you could identify them once you establish, oh, that's Toro, that's Torch, that's Storm, you know, which is, you know, a compliment to the artist.
I really like the art in this issue. It's a new guy, not familiar with Patrick Birkencotter. I mean, who's the artist, and then Carlos Lopez is doing the color art, which I think is really just popping out, you know, giving it that kind of painted look and feel. But those guys, I'm not the names don't like ring any bells with me that they've done a lot of stuff, but they did a really nice job on this. Definitely above the bar. Very nice job on art in this.
Well, if you go just past the staple to those two pages, the first panel on that left page, you've got a little bit of a lens flare effect before the Vision and Toro show up. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to the next page, you got that full page splash of Toro in the flame form doing his thing. And then you look at those AIM agents kind of just below the center in the background. They're just
blurred,
exactly. I mean, it's got subtleties to it that they didn't have to toss in, which are just kind of cool effects and work. And, yeah, you know,
the shadows are done nicely where they're not just solid black. You know, they got that, they look like real shadows. I mean, it's a really well done, and you got some nice shading, you know, from the where the light's hitting the Thinker's face. You know, and a couple of pages in, it's just very nicely done. Very, very nice, and like I said, more than is standardly available in, you know, a lot of comic books. This is definitely in the upper echelons of art.
Yeah. I mean, overall, this I thought was a really solid issue. It focused mainly on Toro versus the Torch. Yet the Torch, even though he didn't really show up all that much, was really ever present in the book. And I'm curious if what we're going to come out of this with is Toro as the Torch, or if it's going to be the Jim Hammond, you know, Android version, or both, or what. So overall, I've really enjoyed this, and, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. So for me, it was a solid 4.
Solid 4. Leaning towards high 4, low 5. I mean, the out of time confusion for me, that was a negative, but the art and just the characterization of the Thinker, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, that really sold the issue for me.
Well, I mean, it's funny. For me, both this and Red Tornado were ones that if the quality of all the other comic books out there were such that these would qualify as just an average issue, I would be so happy. Because both of these were very solid, good stories, very entertaining, good art, and there was some more meat, substance, and thought, you know, in those issues than I would say average. And both of these were just on the verge of having maybe that something extra to make them just be a wow, this is one of the best books I've read, you know, at least this year, if not ever. And it's not that either really fell short of the mark, it's just neither of them bumped up to that. And if somebody were to say, oh, wow, Red Tornado, that was a 5 out of 5 for me, or Torch, that was a 5 out of 5 for me, I could say, you know, I can see that. It wasn't for me, but there was nothing where I could say, well, it can't be for somebody else because it really sucked in this area and stuff. I mean, there are a few things I can nitpick. You know, the chit-chat program for the Torch, the age for you know, Toro's wife and stuff like that here, whatever. But, I mean, to me, those are minor nitpicks. There was nothing here about the story where I thought, wow, that was just kind of weak.
Yeah, none of those things detracted from the story to the point that, you know, the story's like, ah, you know, I can't stand this story, mm-hmm. or anything like that. It's just, you know, like any book, you know, there's going to be certain elements. And like you said, I can see, especially if someone's only reading, you know, 10 comics, you know, a month, then there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I could pick any 10 comics off the rack, and these could be the best of those 10. For somebody, right? Or, you know, it could just be not to somebody's taste, and that you know, this could be the worst book that someone's ever read. It's really funny because, you know, any kind of book, you know, look at, it's such a personal thing about, you know, how any work of art is going to strike somebody in how they enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing with any kind of art or literature, and of course, you know, a comic book is a combination of those. It's just how is that combination of things strike any individual person at a particular time? And are they going to love it? Are they going to be ambivalent towards it? Are they going to really dislike it? You never know. And, you know, certainly we've had some occasions where we have relatively opposite opinions on a particular comic, which, you know, kind of illustrates that point. But I think on on these books were pretty much right in the same ballpark, but, you know, not even necessarily for the same exact reasons.
Exactly, and that's why we say what we like, what we don't like about different books, because I think there are going to be listeners out there that aspects I don't like about a book are going to be aspects they would like about that same book. And, you know, it's, again, it's such a subjective thing. I mean, I can say what I like about a book. I can even say what I thought was well done about the book. And even if I think it's well done, I may not like it or vice versa.
And in our next book, there are going to be aspects of, I'm going to guarantee you right now, there are going to be aspects about this book that I thought were really cool that are going to be the aspects that you were cringing about.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Should we go ahead and jump to that one then?
So our next book is from Radical Publishing. We've got Hercules, The Knives of Kush, number 2. This is a follow-on Hercules series, the second one. The first one was called The Thracian Wars. That was one of my favorite radical books that came out from the first wave that they had. And this one is kind of following on with that. A little bit of new art team. I don't think – I don't remember who the line art person was on the first one, but the Doug Saroy, who is doing the color art on this, is certainly new. And he's doing a really nice job on this. Steve Moore is the same writer, and we're following a Hercules character that is very different from the Marvel Hercules, very different from the Hercules on TV, the Hercules and Xena kind of universe Hercules, played by Kevin Sorbo. Very different from that Hercules. You know, and Hercules, kind of a mythic guy. And this Hercules is kind of he is the son of Zeus. He's got his skin of the Nemean lion who he killed that he wears. That's kind of like one of his signature costume elements. He's got that lion skin, which kind of is got a certain element of invulnerability and, you know, be a good thing to wear as a piece of armor. So that's kind of cool if you know the mythology of Hercules. But this is just like a, you know, kick-ass and take-names Hercules. And what I like about it is, you know, a lot of other incarnations of Hercules, he's kind of a solo guy. You know, I guess on the TV show, he kind of went around with Aeolus. And, you know, some other supporting cast members. This one, he's really got, like, this group of guys that he hangs around with that each have their own personality. They have their own, you know, purpose in it. They're kind of like a mercenary troop, and they're doing stuff. And in this series, they end up down in Egypt. And there is some mystery that needs to be solved. There's, you know, some stuff he's got a job protecting Pharaoh, and he got the Pharaoh's wife, and it's like all kinds of stuff, but it's a really nicely done story. There's a lot of intrigue in it, a lot of good action, wonderful art, you know, like, you know, not to be surprised. We've talked before about radical comics, and it's like certainly up to the bar of a standard radical comic in the fact that it's got, you know, just really nice artwork in it. And I think what really turns the corner on this book, and it's the same thing with The Torch, is that you take that line art and you add that color artist to it, where they're adding that, you know, kind of painted quality to it, where it's like each page looks like a painting, you know, pretty much. You got the depth and shading and shadowing and color and all that. It's just, this is, you know, what a comic book, you know. You can show somebody this, and it's just that notch above, or several notches above, you know, a very flat 2D line art kind of comic that I think it's something that someone's, wow, I didn't know that a comic could look like this kind of feel, you know, that you get from when you have a painted art looking comic. And, you know, that I think that to some extent started back, you know, Alex Ross certainly pioneered that. Not necessarily the very first person to do it, but, you know, that was kind of the genesis of that being really, you know, popular style. But I like it. So.
Yeah, certainly the art is what kicks, I think, the Radical books up a notch over a lot of other publishers. And they've had a couple that have almost a photorealistic look to it. This had more of a kind of a painted, high-quality, animated film kind of a look to it in terms of a... And I'm not talking like a Disney-type thing. I'm talking like a Japanese anime kind of, wow, or there's depth, there's intricacy and stuff.
Yeah, like one of the Final Fantasy movies, or, you know, it's one of these kind of 3D-rendered animated movies that come out with.
I mean, you're not going to look at it and say, wow, that's photorealistic, but you're going to say, wow, that's excellent art. And, you know, I mean, that's something I think Radical has really set a high bar for themselves on and consistently meets. Now, I read both the first issue and the second issue kind of back-to-back, and I thought the first issue was a little gory in places. I thought this issue started out a little gross. But you know me, I'm not a big fan of, you know, decapitations, the eating of brains, which we actually get on page, five here?
Yeah, well, there's more eating of brains in the first series. That guy likes to take the strength of his enemies by eating their brain.
But, yeah, well, you know, not a big fan of that. It was a decent story. And while it was more gory than I tend to care for, it's one of those where it's kind of right on that edge of having a good enough story for me to put up with that excessive gore and violence, or what I consider excessive gore and violence, I should clarify. Yet, you know, the story's not so good, I'll give it a pass on the gore, yet the gore isn't so excessive that I'm going to drop it on that score. You know what I mean?
Well, I think there's a difference when it's done in the context of the story for a reason, or, you know, at least, you know, what passes for a reason, versus what seems like it's just a bunch of gratuitous...
That's a good point.
You know, violence and gore that, you know, kind of like slasher movie kind of gore, which there's nothing wrong with that if you're a fan of that genre either, but I'm just saying that, you know, there are certain times when you can read a story that's very bloody and it just seems like it's that way just for the shock value of it.
Yeah.
Whereas here it was contextual. It was in the context of the story when it was done.
Yeah, it was not gratuitous. I will give them credit for that. But, you know, I have a low tolerance for that. I think most people probably wouldn't be bothered by it. Some people might actually enjoy that aspect of it. Personally, I kind of prefer the Marvel Hercules, but, you know, I'm more of a superhero guy than a Greek mythology kind of a guy. My sister's more into Greek mythology. She'd probably enjoy this quite a bit, although not so much with the gore and stuff. But I do think she would respect the mythology aspects and the way they're treating the characters, developing the characters. There is some substance and subtlety to the story going on here. Things they don't just flat out spell out, but kind of hint at. And, you know, overall, I'm liking that aspect of this, and it's cool to see a good mythological Hercules story being done, because Hercules has been touched on in comics, you know, by almost every major publisher, and this one, I think, is really kind of making it their own while staying true to the original roots of Hercules.
Yeah, I think that this is a comic, like, if you liked a movie like Troy, or Alexander, or Gladiator, if you liked those movies, you should like this comic.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you missed the first series, it's available in trade paperback, The Thracian Wars, and I think you'd like that too if you liked this comic and you liked those movies. The thing I like about this is, you know, again, when they, you know, kind of have that little side plan with Pharaoh,
mm-hmm.
that kind of plays out, they did the same kind of switch up on you in the first series. You know, there's... Like you said, there's some subtlety, there's some kind of thing going on that they don't beat you over the head with, but then you're like, ah, you know, when it plays out. And I think that's a credit to Steve Moore as a writer, that he's able to weave that stuff into the story. And, you know, this is a good example, too, of a comic where it's a part of a 5-issue story arc, but as a single issue, this number 2 issue, it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. I had a setup. I had some story progression. I had some cool things happening. I had some plot developments with a number of the characters. And then it kind of leaves us with a, you know, kind of, oh, crap, how are they going to get out of this thing kind of moment where it's going to drive me to come back for next issue. And I think that another thing that I hear veiled references to all the time is, you know, when they when I hear people saying, oh, yeah, you know, publisher X, you know, they just want to make movies out of their comic books. Well, you know, I don't think there's any creator, maybe there's a couple, you know, maybe Alan Moore, but I mean, there's certainly been lots of movies made out of his characters, although DC probably has the rights to those. But, you know, most creators, if Hollywood comes a knocking, they're going to take the check, you know, and do it. And there's nothing wrong, in my opinion, with making a comic that ultimately will be turned into a movie. There's not even anything wrong with writing a comic that is amenable to being turned into an action type of movie. That being said, what I don't like, and I think is a valid criticism, is when somebody says, well, they're making a comic that is just a premise for a movie, you know? But I don't think that that's the case with these books, because, you know, we've talked to Barry Levine and we've talked to various of the creators at Radical. And the difference that I see here is these guys really, you know, it's going to, you know, I think this could make a really great movie. But as a comic book, I mean, we read a lot of comic books. I think this is a damn good comic book.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing. While it could make a good movie or something, it does make a good comic.
And they think about that. Yeah. You know, it's not an accident because, you know, like I said, when I read this comic as a number two issue, I read a lot of miniseries where, you know, they are good as an entire miniseries, but that's a complaint that we sometimes bring up, is that any individual issue doesn't necessarily stand on its own. Well, this is not the case here.
That's a good point, because a lot of times with the miniseries, it feels like you're getting kind of that piece between the commercials of a TV show, not a full episode. Here, I felt like I got a full episode of a TV show kind of a thing. You know, there was a lot of meat to this, a lot of story points, a lot of payoff, a lot of setup, a lot of things happening. If I had gotten this as however long it would have played out on a TV show kind of a thing, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour, whatever, and got these exact contents, I would have left happy. Not a, where's the rest of it kind of a thing.
Right.
Whereas you look at your typical, and this is more of the superhero stuff that's written for the trade, etc., you feel like all you get is about 10 minutes, maybe 7 minutes or whatever worth of content, with the implication of there would be commercial breaks, and then the rest of the story. And that's so not the case here. And Radical's doing a very good job on all of their issues having that kind of level of substance to it, that level of quality to it, that level of accessibility to it. Because I think even if you hadn't read the first issue here, you get enough in the course of this to kind of get up to speed. Sure, you're coming in the middle of the action and stuff, because there was that first issue that matters, but it's not like they're assuming you've memorized the first issue, etc.
You know, and, you know, this is another one. If you ever listen to the 15 Minutes with Wade podcast that Mark Wade does over for Boom, you know, it's like various episodes he'll talk about, you know, crafting a story and some of these things. And I think Wade is aware of this. You know, there are a lot of writers who are aware of this principle that you want to tell a satisfying chunk of story in any given issue of a comic book, where you progress the story and you give a reader a reason to come back for the next monthly installment of that story. And that's really the difference to me between someone who's telling a good, who's writing a good comic book, and someone who, you know, to some extent, even if you're writing for the trade, that's more for me that you're writing for the movie or whatever. You know, you're not writing something that is enjoyable to the reader as much in the context of a single monthly comic book issue than it is in the whole, you know, 6 or 8 or whatever issue arc. And, you know, if someone was just telling stories that were only most satisfying in the trade format, you know, which, or movie format or whatever, then that's a very valid criticism that you can make, if that's the case. I just don't think that's the case for in this particular instance anyway. You know, and there's a lot of books like that. But in this particular instance, I really enjoyed this issue. Now, again, is it a 5? you know, it's a very high four for me. But very solid comic. I thought this was really well done.
For me, I thought it was really well done on a technical level, both in terms of the story and the art. For me, I gave it a 3, but what was pulling it down was my distaste for the level of gore and stuff in a few places.
Right.
And while I didn't think it was gratuitous, I thought it was above my bar of what I like to read. But technically, they're doing good stuff on the story, great stuff on the art, which ironically enough didn't help on the gore factor for me.
A little more abstract is better in that respect for you.
Yeah, well, and just off panel is better for me in that respect. But really, as far as production values in terms of quality of the packaging, the art, the story, etc., Radical, for me, just starts at that 4. Sometimes they go above with a 5 on something that just really clicks with me. Sometimes it goes down because it doesn't click with me, but they have a consistent level of quality that's really above the bar for every other publisher out there. So,
this was, by my count, a 24-page comic.
I didn't do the count. I was busy on other things, so I will believe.
I counted a couple of times, and I came up 24, $2.99. You know, The Torch, 22 pages, $3.99. They both, I would say, you know, taking and looking at the packages, they were roughly equivalent in, you know, quality of art and story for me. And Radical can put that out for $2.99, and Marvel puts it out for $3.99. And I think it's not that Marvel has to put it out for $3.99. I think it's that they know they can make some extra money by putting it out for $3.99.
They're never going to live down that comment there one guy made about inelastic prices, and we're testing the waters, essentially. It's like,
yeah, basically it's like, if someone will buy it for $3.99, we'll sell it to them for that, you know. And it's true. They're a business. You know, what the heck.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to more of this, and this is probably one of the last books Radical will be putting out in this particular format. They're moving to that, 48 to 56 page format for the $4.99, you know, square mound kind of thing on a lot of their books. So, I mean, on a price per page and value that you get, that's still going to be, really solid, but I think that they're moving away from the 22, 24 page, $2.99 comics.
Yeah. This week for me, I got like 30 comics, but I've read 4 of them. I read these 3 and the final issue of Exiles, number 6. So apparently that latest reboot didn't pan out for them. I just read the first 5. I get this one, it says final issue. I'm like, wow, that was quick. So
yeah, it was kind of like a stealth cancellation too, wasn't it?
Yeah. That happens quite a bit. It's like things just kind of end. So DC's pretty good about, in their solicits, putting final issue and stuff. Marvel, not so much. That kind of annoys me.
I got 27 comics this week. Didn't read that many besides this. I read a couple. I read the last issue of Hotwire, also from Radical. That was a great comic also. That's probably my favorite book that ever came out from Radical, which is saying a lot, you know, for Radical. Just, I like the story a lot. I like the art, and it's not detracting from any other ones, but, you know, very good. I read Sweet Tooth, number 1, from Jeff Lemire, which I was a little, it was like a dollar. You know, it's one of these Vertigo books that comes out for a dollar, so I'm like, oh, what the hell, I'll buy that for a dollar. I'll try this. Is, you know, a full 22-page comic. I had read the preview of that. I thought it was a really well-done book. Interestingly, the preview that they showed was actually the last few pages of the first issue as opposed to the first few pages, which I think was a really good choice on their part, because the first few pages were really well done, but, you know, they set up the backstory to some extent. And I don't think they would have played good as a preview in like a previews magazine or online or wherever.
Right.
But I, you know, good enough to get me to come back for more. And then I got some collected editions, which I have not had a chance to read yet. The second volume of Nocturnals and that Marvel illustrated Wonderful Wizard of Oz by Eric Schanauer and Scotty Young, which I'm looking forward to open up. I heard a lot of good things about, but I haven't had a chance yet on that. But then a lot of other things that I'm looking forward to getting to that I haven't had a chance. I was out of town all week for business. So I think that's it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Booster Gold number 24 from DC, Models Incorporated number 1 from Marvel, and The Life and Times of Savior 28 number 5 from IDW.
The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.